Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry, with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
This joint episode of Breaking Bet and the College Baseball Experience is brought to you by Cut. Cut is a peer-to-peer social betting platform that's U.S.-based and available in 40 states. Head over to cut.com, that's K-U-T-T.com, and use promo code SGPN for a 10% deposit bonus. We're also brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Play their fantasy pick'em for a chance to win 100x in NBA, NHL, college basketball, and more. Sign up today using promo code SGPN to get a 100% deposit match. We're also brought to you by Champs. Run your own March Madness pool and enter Champs free bracket contest for a chance to win $1,000. Go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/champs to enter today. And we're also brought to you by Hall of Fame Bets, the sports betting research platform for parlays, player props, and game lines. Download the Hall of Fame Bets app or visit hofbets.com. Use code SGPN to get 50% off your first month and start making smarter bets today. All right, it is showtime. You heard it at the beginning of the show. A little bit of a joint episode here if you're watching on YouTube. Currently, we're streaming this live on the College Baseball Experience, but it's soon going to be on Johnny Venezia's channel. He's my guest today from Breaking Bet. Johnny V, another huge voice in the college baseball gambling Twitter sphere /X. I'm your host, Noah Bienick, from the College Baseball Experience from the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. We're both without co-hosts today, so we figured, hey, why not? I mean, kudos to Johnny. He hit me up on Monday saying that he would be without his co-host. It took me about till like Wednesday to figure out that I'd be without mine, but we're able to get this thing to work. Johnny V, what's going on, my man?
Dude, this is pretty cool, right? Because, you know, in when there's things that happen last second, like both of our co-hosts that we know were going to be unavailable this week for the Friday edition of the college baseball slate, where it is the universal start of conference play, we found a way to make it work. And, you know, I think it was really cool because me and you haven't really done much college baseball outside of the preseason show of Breaking Bet when I had you on. So I'm glad that we're able to finally get something together.
We had the fantasy draft too on this show. So we did a little bit of a trade off in the preseason.
There we go.
And we featured you on a College World Series episode last year too. So, I mean, it's not like our listening hasn't heard of you and your listening hasn't heard of me, but I mean, we both got our own shows and our own things to attend to, but I'm happy to have you on. I'm sure you're happy to, you know, trade places real quick. You came up with this idea to start off with on the show. I was displaying the banner there at the beginning of the talk. I forgot to take it off. But you mentioned that you wanted to talk about the Golden Spikes market here real quick. We together have listed the top options, currently the favorites over on Caesars right now. That's where you can find the Golden Spikes Award winners for the futures. So these are your current favorites at the top of the odds board here. Jack Aglione at -105 of Florida, Charlie Condon of Georgia at +305, Travis Bezana +675 of Oregon State, JJ Weatherholt 11-1 of West Virginia, Chase Burns 15-1 of Wake Forest. Nick Kurtz 15-1 of Wake Forest. Then four guys at 25-1. That's Tommy White, Braden Montgomery, Carson Benj, and Mike Sirota. And then at 27-1, you got Vance Honeycutt of North Carolina, Josh Hartle, and Hagan Smith, both at 28-1. Those are your guys under 30-1. Johnny, you wanted to eye a couple of guys outside of that too, right?
Yeah, first let's start off by the guy who I've really started getting into aggressively over the last few weeks. It's Charlie Condon. He was 15-1, I think, at the start of last week, last Friday. So 6 days ago, he was 15-1. After the home run barrage that he's been submitting over the last 6 days, he has moved down to plus 305, Noah. That is insane movement in such a short span, but how can you ignore what he's done? He's leading the country with 13 home runs. He's batting 570. This kid has been hitting piss missiles since day one, and I'm afraid if you didn't get in on it when I was talking it up a little bit, I just don't know if right now is the time to be buying. Like 3-1 is probably, you know, still good, but you got to lay a little bit of vig to get – or not vig, but you have to lay some stake in order to get a decent return, so – for what I'm thinking for the guys inside 30-1, Noah, I still think Bazana's got some value at 675. He's been hitting the ball really well. The power is kind of, you know, decreased a little bit from the opening week, 2 weeks. But I think Bazana could end up finishing with 20 home runs. You know he's going to have a high batting average. You know he's going to have the steals.
The power decrease is understandable, too. He's in a northern ball climate. So he'll heat up in the middle of the year towards the end as well.
I feel like Vance Honeycutt is a guy that he's interesting to me because I talked about him in the preseason as one of my guys. He was one of my bets, 15-16-1. This kid is a 30-30 type of player. The big if of him has been his hit tool. He can hit the ball, but as you know, Noah, he's been a little inconsistent because of the strikeouts over his career. But I felt like if Vance Honeycutt can be something close to a 30-30 guy this season and bat even 320, 330, he would have a really good chance because typically we see guys win the Golden Spikes that have a high average, like 360 or better. But we rarely see a guy that's close to 30-30. So he might get a break on the average with the voters if he's getting towards that milestone that is 30-30. So I think it's a fair assumption to bet him, and he's batting over 340 right now. He just finished a four hit day the other day, so I feel like Honeycutt at 27-1 in terms of the shorter prices is not a bad taste right now.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on most of your positions here. I think you got great prices, especially on Condon, who I mean at the opening of this market when it was on FanDuel, he wasn't even listed, and I believe you requested to get him on there. So shout out to you for that. Yeah. So I guess I asked you, over 30-1. I didn't realize you wanted to talk about a couple of guys under 31. For me, I feel like there's a couple of guys just with, some all right value that haven't really played on the mainstream yet. Mm-hmm. Right at the top of the odds board on Caesars, they do it alphabetical order. Billy Amick of Tennessee at 61 is really interesting because we saw him in the first 2 weeks of the season really get hot. And that was when Tennessee was playing a little home cupcake series. And then they were on the main stage that first weekend in Arlington, and he was going off offensively. But for me, I currently hold a position on Cags plus 400 and Peyton Tolley at 35-1, and he hasn't moved yet, really. So I feel all right with the two-way guys. That's just kind of how I wanted to attack this market. I felt like that would be an easy way. And I compared Cags to Shohei. I know it's cringeworthy, but last year Shohei for the AL MVP opened up at plus 115. So I thought the plus 400 on Cags when I got it was still fair. Johnny, anybody else that catches your eye that you want to talk to before we get into Friday's games?
Definitely. Jace LaViolette was a guy that I've been touting since the very beginning because
he was on your fantasy team too, right?
Yeah, he was on my fantasy team for a good reason. When FanDuel opened up the odds, and credit to FanDuel, they were the first book ever to put out the Golden Spikes Award. You know, I was begging DraftKings, and they haven't delivered on one of their one of their yeses to me about these awards, but FanDuel was the first one. But who they put up there at first were the guys that were really the high projected first rounders for the 2024 draft. Then they started adding guys. Lavalette was 75-1. Hit that, gave it out. It moved to 45-1 within 2 days. And, you know, now if you look at him on FanDuel, he's 18-1. But Caesars, for whatever reason, had him at 100-1, which was insanely wrong. Hit that again, tweeted it out. He comes down to 65-1. Then I'm talking about him more, and he keeps dominating. Then he goes to 50-1. Now he's still at 40-1. I really don't understand. He has 9 home runs. He's batting 350. The guy is a very good candidate for a 30-20 season. If his average is in the 350 territory, I don't really know why we're Lavalette's not higher right now. And, you know, if you've listened to me in the preseason on Breaking Bet, there is a science to betting this Golden Spikes Award. Typically, the guys who are not draft eligible, they rarely win. There's exceptions, but Lavalette is a type of exception. He's a guy that's on the board to go number one next year, potentially. He's a guy that's going to be on a team of Texas A&M that might make a deep run. That matters, and he's going to have ridiculous production. So the fact that he's 40-1 right now, and you have FanDuel who had him at 18-1, I would probably price Jace Lavalette at the moment at 15-1. So if you're able to get this kind of value on him right now, and listen, he just came off a 2-home run game against Sam Houston. So if he comes out this weekend against Florida, hits 2-3 home runs, you're going to see a significant drop. I would get on Lavalette right now. 40-1 is a great number. I really think that this kid, Jace Lavalette, is going to have a chance. He's the college version of Matt Olson. If he keeps this up, Noah, we're going to see Lavalette as a finalist. I do worry about Cags. Maybe a makeup call from last year. He had an unreal season. He's been dominant on the mound. So Cags is the worry. But in terms of best of the number, value, true value, Lavalette is locked and loaded, the best one. You're on mute.
Good call. Speaking of Lavalette and Cags, we'll see that matchup on the field this weekend. Good call on the mute button there. One last thing that I wanted to mention on this market here, JJ Weatherholt, currently the fourth highest betting favorite here in the Golden Spikes Award market. He's hurt, and he's been out for the last 2 weeks. I think that dampers his chances big time, especially with the counting stats. But the average is going to be there. It was last year. He was in the mid 430s, 440s. Ridiculous. He's the only bat on the team that is dependable. But West Virginia has been flying under the radar. There's still a solid team. They kind of replaced a lot of that pitching staff. And so far, so good. Let's jump into the weekend series, though. We've got a couple of fire matchups. Before we do, I got to talk to you about why the display get all out of whack. So Merch Madness with sportsgamblingpodcast.com. Everything's 15% off right now in our merch store with the code Madness here before March Madness. You can get college baseball experience merchandise in there as well. We're also brought to you by Cut. It's a peer-to-peer social betting platform that's U.S.-based and available in 40 different states. Player-to-player social betting is a new and better way to bet. Bet directly against your friends or other users on sports, politics, pop culture, and other events with verifiable outcomes. Plus tons of fun social features that give it the feel of a betting social network. Cut offers lower VIG and fully customizable odds where you can create your own bets. Cut handles the payment side of things so you never have to chase anybody down for your money. And social features include group chats, betting leaderboards, head-to-head history, user profiles, fan groups, and more. You can get rewards and cash back every single time you play against your friends or others. So download Cut today in the App Store over at cut.com. That's K-U-T-T. And use promo code SGPN for a 10% deposit bonus. We're also brought to you by Underdog Fantasy, which is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. It's also the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Sign up today with the promo code SGPN and get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant pick'em special. Visit underdogfantasy.com to find out in the App Store. And don't forget to register with promo code SGPN to get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant pick'em special. You must be 18 or older and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-522-4700 or visit www.npcgambling.org. Alrighty, the first series on our slate that we're going to talk about here is an 11.77 pick'em contest series here. Oh, I forgot to move around the ad display there. My fault. It's Indiana State at Xavier. There are odds here for the Friday game. The Sycamores are minus 110 at Hayden Field, where the Musketeers are minus 120. Starting for Friday, or starting for Indiana State, Friday is a little bit of a mystery. Jacob Pruitt was the Friday night starter, but he left his March 1st start with an injury, and he missed last week. How about this name? Cameron Holycross, that's the last name, Holycross, was his Friday replacement. He has three appearances on the year, 11.2 innings, 14 strikeouts, zero walks, 2.31 ERA, a 1.45 Sierra. Starting for Xavier, Luke Hoskins on Friday, junior right-handed pitcher, 2-2. He's got an 8.14 ERA. He did pitch all right against LSU last week, 21 strikeouts, 9 walks, and 21 innings. The Sycamores, as a team, have an OPS of 800, averaging just over 6.5 runs per game, 97 WRC+. Xavier, team OPS of 804, averaging just under 6 runs a game, 95 WRC+. Johnny, give me a winner for the series that you are taking here, and also who wins the Friday game. It's a pretty even split considering the odds are minus 10, minus 20.
To be honest, this is a pass for me. Luke Hoskins, though, he's been a little rough to start it off, but he was solid last year. He had some really good outings towards the end of the season. Xavier's a tough Big East program. They could challenge UConn to win the conference, believe it or not. For me, this is a little too unsure because we're getting mid-major programs that really don't stand out to me one way or another. But if you made me pick, I think I'm going to go with Indiana State. I feel like the Sycamores are a little bit of a tougher team. They were a host last year. Xavier, I still think, has some work to do. I was impressed by their Sunday win against LSU where their pitching completely shut down that offense. So I would lean Indiana State. Noah, wouldn't be an official play for me, though.
Yeah, for the 11.7 weekend contest, I'm going to take Indiana State to take 2-3 here at Xavier. It's going to be a tough one. I think this is a pretty even series overall. For Friday, I would definitely lean the Sycamores. That might be a fringe play on Friday. We'll see how the odds move on this one, in my opinion. The next game on the slate here, 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. Both these teams looking to bounce back after surprising weekend losses. To open up the ACC, Wake Forest is minus 125 on Friday at Virginia, minus 105. This is being played at Davenport Field for three games. Starting for Wake Forest, Josh Hartle looking to have a bounce back outing. He's a junior left-handed pitcher, 3-1, 21 strikeouts, 5 walks in 21.1 innings, 4.22 ERA, 2.74 Sierra. Virginia's pitcher's up in the air here. Have you heard anything, Johnny, on who they're starting?
I haven't, but I would probably think it's between O'Connor. They had a Connolly early, so I confused.
Yeah,
O'Connor or Blanco. But yeah. To me, it's not the starting pitcher that's the concern. It's the bullpen. They imploded three times last week against Miami. That easily could have been a clean sweep in Miami, but their bullpen is a disaster. So Virginia's offense is really good. Wake Forest's offense is not really good. Wake Forest, you know, they're supposed to have a great pitcher going, but Josh Hartle has been battered to start the season. So I don't really have confidence in Wake Forest. And you know that I wasn't big on Wake Forest this year. I rode them to the very end last year. That was my preseason darling. So, I mean, for me, I'm going to wait to see what kind of line movement we get. I'm not going to go anywhere until I see right before first pitch. But I'll tell you what, I am very, very curious to see what this total is going to open up at. I think if we can get like a 10.5 tomorrow, I think I might be inclined to take the over just because you think Virginia's bullpen it's going to take a while for this. Wasn't a one-off thing. This is a residual problem they might have throughout the whole year. But early lean would probably be Wake Forest getting back in the win column after they got that ass beat at Coastal Carolina.
And Duke, just at home versus Duke. But for me, I think this is how the Virginia rotation is going to go. So last week they started Colin McKay on Friday. I think they might run him back out there. Evan Blanco's pitched like their best pitcher so far this season, and he started last Saturday. I think they keep him on Saturday and they run against him out Burns? There against Chase Burns. Yes, because they matched up Blanco against Miami's best option last week.
So I would disagree. You know, I'm not disagreeing that that is what they would do, but I'm disagreeing like. If I'm a team that's opposing Wake Forest right now, just given the state of their ball club, I would be looking to try and get that win on Friday. Because right now, the way Chase Burns is pitching, nobody's beating him. Chase Burns has made these small tweaks in his mechanics that we expected coming in on Wake Forest. And it's proving to be huge because the raw talent was always there, but he just had a little bit of mechanical flaws and it's been fixed. I'm not sending my best pitcher to go against Chase Burns because chances are you're probably not going to win that game. So I'm trying to get the win Friday.
Yeah, mechanical flaws and also just control issues was his, you know, kryptonite last year. How about this, Johnny? Burns strikeouts. We caused up a stir last year or last weekend on Twitter with the Burns strikeouts. Both you and I were just hawking that and waiting for that one to come out.
Very bizarre, by the way.
And he smashed it. But yeah, Evan Blanco, who's pitched like Virginia's best pitcher, he's got he's been solid this year. He was matched up against Rafe Schlesinger last weekend on Saturday. So Brian O'Connor might be wanting to play chess and throw his best starting pitcher against Burns. It'll be interesting because the starting pitcher hasn't been announced here. Wake Forest, like you said, offense a little bit worse than Virginia's, 930 team OPS, averaging just over 8.5 runs a game, 120 WRC plus. Virginia, 1041 team OPS, averaging just under 10.5 runs a game, and they have a 143 WRC plus, 43% better than the average college baseball offense. For me, though, you already kind of hit the nail on the head. I think Wake Forest bullpen's better. I think it's more solid. They're not as deep as they were last year, but I think that Wake Forest, the Deacs, are going to be able to jump on the Cavs bullpen at some point in these games, and I think they take at least 2 of 3 in Charlottesville. Anything that you want to add before we move on to the next series here?
Do you think it's possible that Wake doesn't get better at all? Like everybody's expecting like, oh, Wake's off to a slow start. They did play Duke and you know how high we are on Duke and Coastal Carolina. So it's not like they lost to nobodies, but like, do you think people are like, you know what? Wake Forest is going to come back. They just had a couple tough games, bad start from Hartle. He's due for a bounce back, but Virginia can hit. The only reason why Virginia is not looked upon as being a little bit higher is because their bullpen is literally blowing every lead they have, like they're Iowa. Do you think maybe they just won't get back to where they're supposed to be?
So this is an interesting question. I actually did bet Wake Forest in the preseason that they would win this conference at plus 200. I still like my chances. I looked in the preseason. Their schedule was tough. Like Duke was – I was predicting Duke in the preseason to be the third best team in the ACC. Turns out they might be the best. And then Virginia back-to-back opening up the ACC. The schedule gets much lighter than Duke, Virginia, bang, bang. Clemson is the only other worry on this one. It's the second to last series for the Deacs. But in the middle, it's pretty much Swiss cheese for me. So I think they lose 2 series max this year. That's just how I see it. Whether you want to say that they're just not as dominant as they were last year, I'm totally fine to hear that argument. But I think the Deacs will be fine. The buy price on Wake Forest is probably either right now or after this weekend.
I would buy him, by the way. If anybody's listening, I
wouldn't buy him either.
I was very adamant preseason saying Wake Forest was not going to be a team. I would take the field to win the ACC regular season. That's on Bet Rivers. You can get that. And I did not think Wake Forest was going to make it back to the College World Series.
I wouldn't buy him until we see consistency out of the offense. Too Legit in the YouTube chat is asking where we're reading the lines. DraftKings. Every weekend, Thursday afternoon, they are dropping the Friday night lines. DraftKings is usually first to market with all these. And Crutch is saying that he has a Duke plus 750 ticket, and the Blue Devils get it done this weekend. He'll feel really good. We'll get to that Blue Devils Clemson series later on in the show. This one's going to be a quick one. We're going to move on to another 11.7 pick'em series. There's no odds currently on this game. Honestly, if I were to bet, I wouldn't bet on odds coming out for this one. It's Wofford at Charleston at College of Charleston, the baseball stadium here. That's the name of the park. I mean, shout out to them for the creativeness there. Wofford's been pretty legit with the bats. However, the strength of schedule hasn't really been there so far this season. They've got a 1074 team OPS. They're averaging 13.7 runs per game, and they have a 154 WRC plus. Charleston's more finesse and better on the mound. 882 team OPS, 7.3 runs per game, 115 WRC plus. Starting for Charleston, though, their Friday night starter has been a little bit iffy. It's Jake Brink. He's a sophomore right-hander. 2-0 with 17 strikeouts, 11 walks, 23 innings, 274 ERA, 442 Sierra. Starting for Wofford is Mike Eggert, senior right-hander. He's 3-0, 18 strikeouts, 4 walks, and 13.1 innings, 202 ERA, 438 FIP. We're picking the series winner here in the 11.7 contest. Johnny, how do you divvy up the two teams? What's going to be your pick here?
Yeah, this is strictly just for the 11.7. I'm not putting anything on the card here, but I like the College of Charleston. You know, this is a team that's always kind of under the radar, but they have some talent. They have a great two-way player with Cole Mathis. For me, I would think that CFC is able to grab this one at home. Wofford, you know, they've been a little bit competitive, but ultimately at the end of the day, I think CFC is going to be able to take this.
I'm going to bet on Wofford. I'm not gonna bet on Wofford. I just get the terminology, just it's you know, down pat at this point. But for the 11.7 pick'em contest, I'm gonna take Wofford. I think they win Friday. I think they got the better pitching matchup, and Eggert's gonna go deeper than Brink. And their offense has been solid this year. I want to see them against real competition. This weekend's gonna be a tough challenge for them in their last non-con series. So we'll see how the Terriers do. Before we get to that Clemson-Duke series that we were talking about real quick, let me talk to you about Johnny's going to love this ad. It's Manscaped. Top of the morning to you. This episode is brought to you by St. Patrick's Day's Shamrock Shavers from Manscaped. This year, don't chase the rainbows. Make your own pot of gold and groom your little leprechaun with the leaders in the below-the-belt care. Say goodbye to your clover forest and Manscapes with Manscapes Lawnmower 5.0 and let your confidence shine bright. Embrace the look of the Irish and join 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. Head over to manscaped.com and use promo code SGPN for 20% off plus free shipping. Shout out to them. They sent me this box in the mail this week. So
I got to get Manscaped on my podcast. Wow. Hello. I like there that. We go. I like that. You know what? That's good, man. We've been doing it. We've been doing it all wrong, I guess. So we got to go with Manscaped now.
Yeah. And shout out to Champs too. They're hosting a free March Madness bracket contest for a chance to win $1,000. Plus, if you host your own March Madness pool on Champs, you'll get an extra free entry into the big bracket contest. Tiebreakers are determined by who enters the contest first, so make sure you register now so you don't miss out. Head over to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/champs. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/champs.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch. thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Writing down the ad time here. So I can cut it out for Johnny's portion of the audio. We're going to jump into one of the biggest series of this weekend. It comes in the ACC at Jack Coombs Field, Clemson at Duke. The Tigers are plus 140 on Friday. Duke is minus 180. That could be because Jonathan Santucci, junior left-hander who's on Johnny's fantasy team, he's been dominant so far this year, X maybe the first couple of innings of the Wake Forest game. 3-0, 2.29 ERA. 176 Sierra, 35 strikeouts, 10 walks, and 19.2 innings. Clemson is running out Austin Gordon, junior right-handed pitcher. He's got 10.2 innings under his belt so far this year in 4 appearances. He's got 13 strikeouts, 7 walks, with a 6.75 ERA, 3.99 Sierra. Clemson as a team has a 9.67 team OPS, averaging just over 8 runs a game, 128 WRC+. Duke, 10.70 team OPS, 10 runs a game, 147 WRC plus. Honestly, the question mark coming into the year about the Blue Devils was, is their offense going to be able to carry their own weight? It turns out that it is very strong this year, Johnny. How are you divvying up the two teams on Friday? And this is also an 11.7 pick'em contest series. So give us your series winner at the end too.
I mean, you know me. I'm very, very vigilant about checking out what the I'm very vigilant about checking out the lines of like when they drop. So today we got a very early look at where the lines were on DK. They're up by 5 o'clock, maybe 4:40. And I noticed Duke was minus 150 against Clemson. I grabbed that. I played it. I tweeted it out. It's out to 180 right now. We're seeing a lot of aggressive movement within the last few hours. And for good reason, Jonathan Santucci, bump day, crutch, you're right. Santucci was not good against Wake last weekend. That was maybe the worst I've ever seen him. He couldn't command his pitches, way, way too many pitches. His fastball looked a little dead. His slider was just a little bit too all over the place. This is where he's going to bounce back. This is the kind of series that the Duke Blue Devils need to win after a huge showing at Wake, taking the series against the number one Demon Deacons. This could be qualified a little bit of a letdown series. Even though Clemson's a good program, they're not to the level that I think some of these other programs are. So they need to get off to a good start, get Santucci, Friday night bounce back, give Daddy 6 shutty with 10 punchies against this Clemson team that really only has 2 great bats, Will Taylor and Cam Cannarella. I think 180 is getting a little stiff here, Noah. I feel like I wouldn't play it past 180 given the movement, but I'll tell you what I would do. I would lay a run line. I would lay 1.5 with the Blue Devils. Nothing past 125, but I feel like Duke gets Friday, and I think they get Sunday.
I like the idea of that look with the run line here. I am with you on Friday with Duke, but I actually think Clemson's going to take the series. I think that if there's one team that gives Duke the run for their money and with the bullpen talent and the depth, it's Clemson. I am in love with the Tigers bullpen. They returned 7 of their 8 bullpen arms last year, most used bullpen arms, and all of them had ERAs sub-4. This is a really deep team. And they haven't really had the opportunity to show it. Their strength of schedule hasn't been amazing so far this year. And they've been crushed on some Fridays, Kennesaw State being one. And Billy Barlow's out of the weekend rotation. He was just starting this midweek game here. So I like Austin Gordon going on Friday. Get him into a competitive game against Santucci. I think Duke wins on Friday. But give me Tristan Smith. I honestly love his arm the most in this weekend rotation for Clemson. And then Aiden Knack against the TBA for Duke. Listen, I know Duke loves the bullpenning on Sundays. They've got tremendous depth in the bullpen. I think Clemson gives them a run for the money. I think on Sunday they have a shot. If I'm getting this plus 140 price on Saturday and Sunday, you can book it. I'm going to be on Clemson for the money lines. Duke, we have not seen a Duke Blue Devils baseball team talked about this much before. There's a lot of pressure coming or a lot of pressure on them this weekend. And like you mentioned, it could be labeled as a letdown series. I don't think you want to be going in overlooking this Clemson Tiger squad. I'm very high on them. Duke Friday, Clemson series for me.
Well, that's why I'm saying Duke Friday, Clemson Saturday with Tristan Smith, and then Duke comes back on Sunday. Kind of the same path that happened this last weekend. Because here's the bottom line. I didn't buy Clemson coming into the season. I think their pitching is a huge problem. They've gotten some good performances from guys like Tristan Smith. Aiden Knack's been okay, but they lose a guy like Caden Rice. That's huge. Austin Gordon has not been impressive. I feel like, and we've seen this Clemson team really shit the bed. They should have lost the series to Xavier week one. They were
dominant against Xavier.
Maybe game three. They should have lost two games against Xavier.
They mercied him.
Opening weekend? The third game. The one game they mercied him. But one game I think they came back late. It was a heroic one. And then I think they lost another one. I have to refresh it.
So 14-3 mercy, 8-3, 11-7.
Didn't they lose one against Clemson?
They lost one against Kennesaw. They got murdered against Kennesaw on Friday.
No, okay.
They've been shaky on Fridays.
No, here's what happened. 14-3 was Friday, but so I think I know what happened was these two scores for Saturday, Sunday looked a lot bigger than it actually was.
I watched those games. No, I was pretty it was pretty convincing for the
time. I saw Xavier having a lead late going into it, and then I think somebody hit a home run for Clemson. It might have been that Sunday game when it was 11-7.
I got the box score up right now.
Show me the box score because now I'm curious.
So Clemson after seven was no runs were scored in the eighth or ninth in game three. It was 11-7 after seven. And Clemson had eight runs by the sixth inning in game two. So they were up comfortably in all three games.
Okay. And I must be wrong.
Shout out to Nick Hathcoat too, because I'm totally with him. If we're getting a plus 130 price here with Tristan Smith on Saturday, I'm on it with Clemson up against, I think it's Andrew Healy with Duke. And then they have a TBA on Sunday, which has been quite normal for Duke over the last two seasons, and they've done totally fine. And also, good point from Crutch. I just looked it up. Duke is minus 210 now on DraftKings for Friday.
Are they?
Yeah. So
I just looked 2 minutes ago.
So I wouldn't single that anymore. I would look to put that in either a money line parlay or the run line. Jesus. So
wow, yeah, good call. That was literally 180 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, when we did the show notes, it was 180.
But I checked at 9:37 Eastern time. It's 9:41, and it was 180 to 140. But I don't know. I think Clemson, Duke's a different animal. They're not going to face many Dukes this year. I think Duke takes a series. I'm not big on Clemson. You know, the Palmetto State series against South Carolina, where, you know, they played them tight. They came away with a walk-off or a late home run. It was an impressive
walk-off bomb on Saturday against South Carolina in game one, technically game two. The first one was rained out. And then
But it was impressive. But Duke is – South Carolina is not Duke. I think this is a different series. I think they take game one and game three.
I think it's going to be super tight. So this one you added to the rundown. You've got a bet here in Georgia at Kentucky. When we were doing the rundown, it was Georgia minus 130 at Kentucky plus 100. This one's at Kentucky Proud Park. What'd you like about this one, Johnny? I'll let you lead.
I like the way Georgia's playing, bro. This opened at Georgia minus 130. Now it's out to minus 150. Kentucky just lost this past weekend. I'm not really buying this Kentucky program. I know people are really high on them because they're a team that can come out and be a host in the out of the SEC in the regionals, maybe even the super regionals. But to me, we got to ride this Georgia wave, guys. The Georgia Bulldogs offense has been one of the best in the country, bar none. You could maybe make a case that the only offense that's been better top to bottom throughout the whole season has been Coastal Carolina and maybe Texas Tech. And the pitching has been good enough. Charlie Goldstein is a legitimate weekend starter in the SEC. He's a guy that you might see his stats from last year, his 5+ ERA, and say, he sucks. Not true. This guy has picked times where he showed out against teams like Tennessee, teams like Arkansas, and sometimes it's one or two mistakes with this guy that get him in trouble. But against Kentucky, an offense that I'm not afraid of, I feel like Georgia goes into the Wildcats home and they get the win. I think 150 is fair. I probably wouldn't play it past 170, Noah.
I agree with you. I want a piece of this Bulldogs team here on Friday as well. Travis Smith starting for Kentucky has not looked the greatest so far this year. He's 1-2 with 17 strikeouts, 12 walks, and 19.2. He's got 5.95 ERA, 4.60 Sierra, both of them not as great. Going up against this Georgia offense, 11.61 team OPS. They're averaging just under 11 runs a game, and they have a 162 WRC plus as a team. The Bulldogs have been legit. And look, I think there's a point to Kentucky's ballpark being a large park here, and it fucks with some teams from the SEC that visit for a weekend. However, here on Friday, Travis Smith is a pretty much a pitch to contact pitcher. Georgia, I think, gets the best of him on Friday. Mason Moore is the guy that I think could give Georgia some trouble. But Georgia's weekend rotation has also been pretty steady so far this season. It's going to be tough to find a spot for Kentucky, in my opinion, this weekend. So Georgia minus 150 is going to be a bet for me when we talk, when we recap our cards at the end of the show. Anything you want to add on the series before we move on?
Yeah, listen, you could also back the overs. I don't think the market is fully caught up to how dominant Georgia is at the moment. They will in the next, over the next couple weeks, guys, you're going to see the sports books starting to catch up to what teams are for the 2024 season. The lines get sharper at the open. They might be a little bit more dramatic to move than they already are, and you're not going to be getting as much of an edge as you are right now. So I feel like if Georgia keeps doing what they're doing, they're going to start being regarded as one of the better programs in the SEC for this year. So, you know, you're getting them a little bit of a discount. So let's say this was Texas A&M against Kentucky, Noah. A&M might have opened up at like minus 165, and Kentucky's a plus 130. But Georgia, you were getting about a 30-cent difference at the open. So ride a team like Georgia. And listen, if they let you down, they let you down. But, you know, while the wave is hot, the iron's hot, you got to strike. Ride this wave, guys. Ride it with us.
Speaking of Texas A&M, that fire series against Florida is coming up here at Condren Family Park. Texas A&M, minus 140 on the money line. They're the betting favorite here against the Gators, plus 110. This also is an 11.7 pick'em series. So we'll get Johnny's series winner here at the end of his handicap. Starting for Texas A&M is the southpaw, Ryan Prager. He's a redshirt sophomore. He's 4-0 on the year. Competition could be questionable. Probably is. He's faced Arizona State, which would be the best competition he's faced. The other three, kind of cupcake city. He's got 40 strikeouts. Just 3 walks in 23.2 innings, a flat 0 ERA, and a 0.17 Sierra. I mean, it's been dominant. Cade Fisher, on the other hand, he got banged around by St. John's, and it's really ruined his line. He's 1-1 on the year with 27 strikeouts, 4 walks, 16.2 innings on the year, 7.56 ERA, 1.9 Sierra. A&M's been one of the most dominant offenses. We're just talking about Georgia being one. Aggies are right there with Georgia. They've got a 1048 team OPS. They're averaging net 10 runs a game. Florida, on the other hand, 963 team OPS, 869 runs per game, 126 WRC plus. This is another large park in the SEC. Could fuck with some teams when they visit Gainesville. Are you on the Ryan Prager train? Does he keep it up against let's just say best team he's faced so far this season.
He might. I got to be honest. I wouldn't be surprised to see Texas A&M come in here and sweep them. I don't think they will. I think Florida will get a game. But, you know, I was pretty adamant about this, again, preseason. Cade Fisher was great in the midweek role last year. He was great. But it's different when you get called on to be the Friday night guy in the SEC for a team that just went to the College World Series. I think he's talented, Cade Fisher, but there's some things he has to do in order to take that next step. You're getting a dominant strikeout to walk ratio. He's only got 4 walks to 27 Ks, but he's giving up a lot of base hits. And Texas A&M is also one of these lineups that's been one of the most dominant in the country. They have stars at the top of this order. Gavin Grahovic, Braden Montgomery, Jace LaValette. So, you know, for me, I don't really see how Fisher's going to be able to navigate this. I feel like A&M puts up at least 7-8 runs here. And for me, Ryan Prager is a guy that have a lot of question marks coming in. And I do expect him to regress at some point, especially once conference play starts like it is this weekend. But, you know, I think this is another guy where it's not like Florida has been beating this great competition. I think we're able to get Prager for another good start here. And if nothing else, you know, he's good enough because I do think the Aggies are going to score. I would actually say the Aggies take game 1 and 2. Maybe Caglione gets them right on Sunday. He's been pitching really well. We ride that wave. But I would probably say A&M Friday, Saturday, and then you're going to get an inflated price for the Florida money line on Sunday. And by the way, this is already out to minus 145. So more people taking the Aggies action.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Ryan Prager was a guy that I was super impressed with in that 2022 team. He was coming out of the bullpen kind of as a leverage guy for Schlossnagel, and he was borderline dominant as a freshman. So I kind of figured that he'd have a pretty good season this year coming off the Tommy John. And he has not disappointed me so far this season. I think Texas A&M wins this one. I think Saturday is a toss-up between Liam Peterson and Tanner Jones. Sunday, I give it the Cags. So it's tough to win on the road in the SEC. I'm going to take the home team here for the series. Give me Florida. I think it's going to be a leverage play against the field as well. I think a lot of people are going to be Texas A&M backers. But for Friday, give me Texas A&M with the Aggies. I would play this one anywhere under minus 160 because that bullpen has also been pretty questionable for Florida. Brandon Neely was one of the most dominant closers in the SEC last year, led the conference in saves. He's been hit around so far this year, and he did not have a great appearance against St. Mary's last weekend. So very questionable just kind of all around on the pitching staff here for the Gators. But I think conference play starting up, this is the right medicine they need. I think they'll get up for this weekend. Give me the Gators in the series.
This would be a lot of overs for me, Noah. I think this is going to be a high-scoring series every single game. You know, Prager – listen, if Prager goes out there and shoves for 6-7 innings tomorrow,
tip your cap.
So be it. But, you know, it's a realistic expectation to think that A&M can average like 8 runs a game over this weekend. And Florida's going to get theirs because they do have a great offense. It's just the pitching is unreliable. So I'm a little surprised. I like that we're on opposite sides, but I am a little surprised that you're going with Florida considering how iffy the pitching's been. Even Liam Peterson, I think, you know, he's the talent's there. But again, it's early in his career. He's got to figure some stuff out. I feel like, you know, you're getting the advantage here against the young pitchers with an A&M team that has just been utterly dominant.
Yeah, and you wanted to talk about the overs too. I looked up Cade Fisher, and I pulled up his BABIP. The current batting average on balls in play against Cade Fisher this year, do you want to take a guess at what is that?
I would say it's over 5.
It's 455, which is extremely high. So that's the regression, I don't think the regression's coming here against Texas A&M, who's going to put the ball in play.
And what's the batting average against?
310.
So, I mean, you would think that he's actually gotten lucky. So the BABIP, I'm not a big analytics guy, but I think some stuff's useful. I feel like BABIP is one of those that, you know, it's good in a case like this to say, Cade Fisher's actually gotten lucky because his average against is only like 310, as you said, but his BABIP is 455, which would indicate that he's getting hit a lot harder than it's showing, but he's been getting lucky. So A&M is a team that doesn't miss mistakes very often. Lavalette might have three or four home runs this series. Montgomery might have two or three. Grahovic might have one or two. Like, I think this is going to be a launch pad this weekend.
Yeah, we're also dealing with just small sample sizes in general. A lot of the advanced statistics really just haven't settled in yet because Sierra loves them. It's at 1.9 right now. That takes into account just like how hard hit the balls are, whether it stays in the park, whether it goes. In Sierra, in college baseball, I value it a little bit more than FIP because it gives pitchers credit if it's ground balls versus fly balls. And in college baseball, most pitchers are not dominant and they're not striking out guys left and right. At the end of the day, these are all amateur baseball players. Most arms, unless you're talking about like the dominant Friday night guys where they're racking up the Ks like Hagen Smith or Chase Burns, I value the Sierra a little bit more than the FIP. Small sample size. It's a little bit still early in the year. To your point, the BABIP is a little bit crazy. And against Texas A&M, the Friday over could be in play if Prager gets hit around a little bit. I'm talking like two or three runs in five innings, get to that Aggie bullpen, which isn't amazing on paper. 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Auburn plus 130 on the money line at Vanderbilt, minus 166. This is at Hawkins Field here. Auburn's going to trot out Chase Alsip. He's a junior right-handed pitcher. He's 1-0 on the year, 23 strikeouts, 6 walks, and 18.2 innings. 5.30 ERA, 2.88 Sierra. Vanderbilt's going to trot out Carter Holton. He's a junior left-handed pitcher. Forgot to put in his stats here. Vanderbilt as a team, 943 team OPS, 867 runs per game, 124 WRC plus. On the season, Holton's 2-0 with a 5 ERA and 3 starts, 18 innings, 30 strikeouts, 7 walks. He's got a 171 Sierra with that 5 ERA. So he's had a little bit of bad luck so far this season. Vanderbilt's been impressive, at least to my expectations, overachieving. Some could say that about Auburn, but I actually kind of was a little bit higher on the Tigers this year. They've got a 1031 team OPS, 963 runs per game, and a 138 WRC plus. The plus money on Auburn's certainly enticing. Vanderbilt's pitching staff's tricky to fade, trying to find your spots. Johnny, what's your read on this series?
For me, you know, Auburn didn't really play a great series last week against Austin Peay. Austin Peay, I think, you know, we can all agree that is – that's a really, really pesky mid-major. Yeah, they're feisty. They're a team that's going to be – they're going to be a handful. They're not going to be a team that probably goes far. I would imagine they make it to the field to 64 if they keep going the way they are. They're not going to be a team that goes far, but they're going to be one of those teams like Campbell was in 2022. They are
I added Lyle Miller-Green as a 17th-round sleeper in our fantasy.
I remember. So. Yeah, they're a good team. But anyway, Auburn, even though they played them – they're an SEC powerhouse. They're supposed to be looking for a sweep against a team like Austin Peay. So I think the fact that they came out a little flat, Chase Alsip is one of these guys, and this is the same handicap I had against Iowa and Brody Brecht a couple weeks ago when Iowa was getting a lot of money. Auburn is a team that when they play to their ceiling, they are very tough. But the downside is they have a low floor. That perfectly embodies Chase Alsup. He's the guy that pretty much approaches triple digits. He's got a high ERA. He can get hit around. But to be honest, I wasn't big on Vanderbilt coming into this year, and I feel like laying 166 with Carter Holton on the mound, who I do like, is too big. I'm going Auburn. Auburn can absolutely mash. If Alsup comes out and he's even decent, I feel like Auburn has a chance to steal this one because, for my opinion – this should be more like Vanderbilt minus 140, Auburn plus 110. This should be just because Vanderbilt's at home, they're getting the slight nod. I think Auburn is getting too much money right now, so I will go with the Tigers to take game one. And I got to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised to see them take this series.
So I value I come to think that the SEC, only two of the 14 teams last year had winning records on the road. It's hard to win on the road in this conference. Even if you're high on a team, they just getting one and getting out of a town is an impressive weekend for most teams in the SEC. I view Auburn and Vanderbilt pretty much on the same plane. I agree with your kind of what you would set the price at, minus 140 plus 110. Doesn't mean that I want to bet on Auburn, though, because I think Holton on his best day could shut down most lineups in the SEC. For me, I think the Commodores win this series. I think Auburn gets game two. Actually, you know what? They switched around. So Joseph Gonzalez is starting on Sunday. That might change my opinion on it, because
that was weird. That was weird. They pulled him from his start on Saturday. They didn't. He was scheduled to go, and I don't know exactly what happened. So they're changing it up a tad.
Yeah. I think it was Carson Myers who went on Saturday last week. I would expect him to go for Auburn on Saturday again. Just going up against Cunningham, I think that's the matchup that you want to fade against Vanderbilt. Like I said, it's going to be tough to find a spot. I mean, Vandy's pitching staff is pretty good. So I would like Auburn in game two, but I think Vandy wins games one and three. That's how my read on this series. I'm probably going to end up on Auburn in game two if they're around this plus 130 price. But Auburn on Friday is not going to be played by me, by yours truly. Before we touch on the last three series of the show, let me talk to you about Hall of Fame bets real quick. Win bigger by betting smarter this NBA season with Hall of Fame Bets, the sports betting analytics platform for parlays, player props, and game lines. Research every NBA and soccer bet with historical stats and data. Enter any parlay idea into the Hall of Fame Bets revolutionary parlay optimizer tool to get hit rates broken down by leg as well as an expected probability for the entire parlay. Sort all players by hit rate for any bet to learn which players are hot and which picks have value. Stop betting in the dark and join over 30,000 users researching Hall of Fame Bets to craft more intelligent, data-driven parlays. Download the Hall of Fame Bets app or visit hofbets.com and use code SGPN to get 50% off your first month today. Start researching, start winning with Hall of Fame Bets. All righty, so where was it in the chat? Jackson Crutcher says Tennessee's about to roll Alabama this weekend. Let's touch on that series, Johnny. Friday night, at least when we wrote the odds down, we're 54 minutes into the show. Tennessee was the dog, plus 100 at Alabama's Sewell Thomas Stadium, minus 130 were the Crimson Tide. This is an 11.7 pick'em series. So at the end of Johnny, analysis, let's get his pick on the series, who he thinks going to win it. Starting for Tennessee on Fridays, AJ Causey. He fills in for AJ Russell. This is, I think, the second or third week that Causey's filling in as the Friday night starter. On the year, he's 3-0 with 30 strikeouts, just three walks in 20.2 innings. He's got a 1.31 ERA, a 1.27 Sierra. Going for Alabama is Ben Hess, junior right-handed pitcher, 3-0, 28 strikeouts, six walks, 17 innings on the year, 2.65 ERA. 1.22 Sierra. Tennessee as a team has an 11.20 team OPS, averaging just under 11 runs per game, 1.54 WRC plus. Alabama right there with them, right behind their tail, 10.49 team OPS, averaging just under 10.5 runs per game, 1.45 WRC plus. My pick here for Friday, one, I like Tennessee. I love AJ Causey. Being just a sidewinder on a Friday is my kind of stuff. For anybody that didn't know, I was just kind of a low slot joker myself in college. So he's really hitting close to home. But I love an under here. Both Causey and Hess have been dominant to start this year. Alabama's offense, I have some questions about how they will play against tough competition this year. Indiana has been shaky. That was the team they put up a ton of runs on in that Frisco challenge earlier this year. Against Dallas Baptist and Arizona, they kind of had their hands full offensively. Mm-hmm. So I love an under. Johnny, where are you at Friday night, Tennessee at Alabama?
I think you hit the nail on the head. I like Tennessee in the under. This is the kind of series that Tennessee should win. I feel like they have the better offense. They can go toe-to-toe with Ben Hess. AJ Causey has been really good. And, you know, it's bizarre because AJ Russell – was just so dominant against Texas Tech in the opening weekend in the Kubota series in Arlington. I'm not really sure what's going on with him. Tony V said he had something to do with side soreness. So I'm not really sure when we're going to see him back. But if AJ Causey keeps throwing like this, we're going to have an Andrew Lindsay situation on our hands where this guy just gets thrown into the Friday night role and he shoves and you keep him there because it's working. Ben Hess might be the best pitcher in this entire series. Drew Beam is, you know, he's right there, but I feel like Ben Hess is just, he's a little bit more of a dog. But to me, you said it, the Alabama offense, I don't think is on the same par as Tennessee's. So for me, I think the Volunteers go into enemy territory, get the win, but I would say this is lower scoring. I feel like if you're getting 10.5 or higher, this is an underplay.
Yeah, I like the under here. That's going to be a bet for me for sure. Honestly, I would borderline look at it if it was 9.5 too. I think this is a 4-2 ball game, 5-2 ball game. Tennessee wins. And I've got Tennessee winning this one 2-1, maybe even a rare road sweep in the SEC. It's tough, but I think Alabama's fighting an uphill battle here against Tennessee. I think this odds going to flip as well on Friday night. I think Tennessee's going to close as a favorite. So if you see value in that and want to be on a side with great CLV, go ahead and take the Vols as well on that money line. Real quick
before we move on to the next game, I like how you said that because it's bizarre, bro, because we've seen really aggressive movement over the last hour. Georgia got bloated out. South Carolina got bloated out. A&M's getting bloated out. Duke got bloated out. Like, all these games are getting bloated out. And, you know, the only one that really had moved since I put it out was Auburn-Vanderbilt. I don't think I officially put out a game here yet. I wanted to see if – so I do like Tennessee, but I want to see the total first. And I was waiting to see if people start taking Alabama. I wanted to see if people would start hitting Bama hard, getting them out to like -150, and then we get a Tennessee +120. So there's been very aggressive movement, and I think that probably could continue. But yeah, dude, this is a big Volunteer spot, and if we're looking at it real quick, they got Tennessee this week, but then they got a couple tough series coming up. Alabama does, Georgia, South Carolina. And then it eases up with Kentucky, but then they go Arkansas and A&M. Then they go Ole Miss, and you know it gets a little bit easier before they go LSU, Auburn. So this is one where I think Alabama is going to be at the beginning of a tough next couple weeks.
I love how in the SEC, a little bit of an easier week is Kentucky, who is just, you know, they were only the 12th national seed in the NCAA tournament last year. But at the beginning of the year, a lot of people were looking at the Georgia series as a little bit of an easier weekend for Bama. But at the beginning of the year, when we were talking about SEC totals, I had Georgia winning that one 2-1. I have my SEC win totals in the entire schedule that I had printed out. And I configured all the preseason totals. I have it taped to my desk on the left. Nick Hathcote, he's also in the college baseball gambling Twitter space as well, /X. He's a Vols fan, and he says, expect to see AJ Russell used as an opener on Sunday for about 40 to 50 pitches. Interesting look there. If Tennessee's going to be a dog on Saturday and Sunday, I'm going to be taking them when they're not facing Hess. My only hesitation is I can totally see the world where the Vols lose because Hess shoves. That's the only thing. So I am choosing to be on the under on Friday. We move to the penultimate series here on tonight's show. North Carolina -140 on the money line at Miami +110. This series is being played at Mark White Field. Starting for North Carolina, this is a projection. Neither one of these teams have announced their starting rotations, to my knowledge, to this point. Projecting Folger Boas, the freshman left-hander for North Carolina to start. He's been pretty good this year. Against good competition, he faced East Carolina notably. And last weekend, they played a red-hot Pitt team and held them to nothing. Zero runs. Bo's hit is 2-0, 19 strikeouts, 8 walks, in 21.1 innings. He's got a 2.11 ERA with a 3.90 Sierra. So a little bit of regression due. We'll see if it's this weekend. Miami projecting Gage Zeal. He's been their Friday night starter every week until now. He's 0-1 in 4 starts. So their team's lost when he came out of the game once, and they were losing and or they were winning, and the team gave it up with the pen and the three other times that he was pulled. So all four of these games that he started have been at barn burner, decided in the late innings pretty much. He's got 23 strikeouts on the year, 8 walks, 23.1 innings, 674 ERA. God damn it. 674 ERA, 374 Sierra. And both teams very even with the bats offensively. Johnny, how do you separate the two teams here?
I mean, I think it's the matchup of the overrateds. I don't really like either of these teams at the end of the year, but you know, there's some fireworks. I think both of them have firepower. I feel like this could be an over. I would have to see what the total is because, you know, Gage Zeal is one of these guys that when he's on, he's on. But that's kind of few and far between. We've seen Gage Zeal come 8 shutout innings last year. But then we've seen him go 3 innings, give up 7 runs. So which one of those guys shows up? That's the big one. Folger Boaz, you know, he's been really good to start. But again, you know, we expect regression to come in. This is probably the best offense he's faced thus far in his career. Yeah. So I'd probably expect a little bit more of a higher score. I don't really like a side right now because the pitching is a huge question mark. And, you know, the offenses are pretty even, if we're being honest. So I do think a total at like 10.5 to the over, that's really what I'd be looking for.
I'm doing a quick search. This might be the freshman's first road game of his career as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking that up real quick, and then we'll move on. Because I know they hosted East Carolina in game 1. They hosted Wagner. They hosted Princeton. They hosted Pitt. Yeah, this is his first road game of his career. That's a nice angle if you're looking to fade it. I have the Canes winning the series. I was pretty impressed with what they did against Virginia last weekend. The bats showed up, never gave up in the 9 innings in 2 of the 3 games, the first 2, and they had the lead in the third one and they gave it up. So I like the Canes. I'm not going to play it though. Last series that we're going to talk about here today comes in the Pac-12. This is part of the 11.7 pick'em contest. So we'll get the 3-game set winner from Johnny here. It's Cal plus 135 on the money line at Oregon minus 175. This one's being played at PK Park, Phil Knight Park. Cal made a weekend rotation switch up. Originally, Trey Newman was starting on Fridays. He's been moved to Saturdays. Luke Short, the grad senior left-hander, he's 1-0 in 3 starts this year. He's only thrown 12.2 innings, so he doesn't go very deep in his starts. 10 strikeouts, 8 walks in 12.2 innings, like I said. 284 ERA, 501 Sierra. So expected some pretty harsh regression. And RJ Gordon is kind of in the same boat. He's been touched up a little bit so far this year. He's got 398 ERA, 543 Sierra. He's got 12 walks in 20.1 innings with 16 strikeouts. He's a pitch-to-contact guy. Cal, 909 team OPS, Oregon 930, and Cal averaging 7.4 runs per game. Oregon a little bit better with 8.4. Two teams are hard to separate here on Friday, but I like Oregon's pitching depth for the weekend overall much better than Cal's. Oregon, if I was alive last week, I got eliminated from the Survivor while I was on vacation, so. Another year where I've been eliminated from the Survivor contest. 2 years ago, I was in Vegas. Last year, I was in Vegas. This year, in Florida, Oregon would be my Survivor pick this week against Cal. I'm not looking to lay minus 175. I can tell you that. However, I like the Ducks in the series. Johnny, how do you split the two here?
Yeah, I'm not playing anything in this series because I don't really like it. But to tell you the truth, there's no way I could lay 175 with the Oregon Ducks.
Kind of crazy.
In this year of our Lord 2024. If Jay Stovall was pitching, if we had Jay Stovall still on the team, yeah, I'd lay 175 with these Ducks. Cal is a team that they're also feisty. They're not good, but they're not that bad. They're a team that can show up and show out. They have some stars on their team, bro. Caleb Lomavita, Rodney Green Jr. I feel like you're getting this kind of money on a team like Cal that can score. It's not bad. It's worth the shot. And, you know, I'd be curious. I would say I would be curious to see how this thing gets moved out. So let's say Oregon moves out to like minus 210. Now you're able to get Cal on a generous run line. I think that's probably the direction I would look at. But I would not put Oregon in a parlay. I don't feel confident about them. I would not lay 175. I feel like it's Cal or pass for me.
All righty. I agree with you on the analyzing the price situation here. In the pick'em contest, I'm going to go Oregon. Who's your winner for the three-game set here?
I'm going to go Cal.
Okay.
I like the Bears. I think they're a team that it can sneak up on you. I feel like Oregon lost too much talent last year. You know, Oregon was kind of one of those teams flew under the radar, got hot at the right time. You know, they Oral Roberts was a real son of a bitch the way they were able to come back in an elimination game.
Never said that.
Go to the College World Series. But the Oregon had some dogs last year. It's Seven Ceballos. They had Jay Stovall. They had the Aoki. What's that kid?
It was Riku Nishida.
Yeah, Nishida. They had him. They had some talent. Like,
I love how I guessed that when you said Aoki.
Yeah, though. Of course you did, right? But, you know, this is a different Oregon.
You're the team, one that put me in that position.
And I don't – you did good. You passed it. I don't know how our boy Matt Grissom picked Oregon and won the Pac-12. I got to be honest. I'm not impressed with the Ducks, dude. I'm not. They don't have anything close to the team they had last year. So there's no reason to be laying this big of a number with them. But I will say –
pitching depth, though. I do like the Ducks.
I don't know. Like, they have depth, but they just have a bunch of guys that aren't that good. They have a bunch of okay guys. I don't really see a super high ceiling like a Stovall is. And, you know, the Mercado, the Renzel, the Gordon, like, who gives a shit? None of them are that good. But I will say this. If this was reversed and Cal was minus 175 and Oregon was plus 135, then I would take Oregon because neither of these teams at this juncture – should be laying this heavy of a price.
I agree. The price is a bit disrespectful for sure. I like the segment that you do at the end of your shows. You talk a little bit about you sprinkle in some long shots. I don't know if you've had that prepared. I'm kind of springing that on you. But real quick, before we get to the cards, did you have any long shots that you wanted to talk about? After all, this is a joint show between Breaking Bet and the College Baseball Experience.
Goddamn right. You better never forget it. I think, you know what? I actually think I'm going to go, I got a couple, but I'm going to start off with the late game, USC against Stanford. I'm wearing the SC shirt. I actually got this when I went to the football game in October. But awesome. It's perfectly applicable here. I want to confirm Kaden Aoki, Matt Scott. Matt Scott's looked really good. He's gotten a little bit of hype. The fastball's looking good. You know, the stats are looking nice. Kaden Aoki is a solid Friday night guy. And I feel like USC, you know, Matt Grissom, you, myself, we all expected the Trojans to be a little bit better this year. We expected them to be a Field of 64 team. But at the end of the day, I feel like at some point or another, they're going to get hot and they're going to start clicking. And for me, I've been fading Stanford a lot to start the season just because I don't think they're that good. And you're laying near minus 200 with them. And I got to be honest, if you wait on this line, it's probably going to get more money for Stanford. A lot of people are probably going to throw Stanford in a money line parlay. So I think USC is a fair money line shot. And I think it's a good little run line shot because if Aoki pitches well, which is very possible, the offense is due for – they got to regress to the mean. And they've been down here, and regress to the mean for them means getting up here. Could be this weekend. That's one of them, Noah.
So I guess I'm up next. I'll take you to the Big 12. Oklahoma's catching a disrespectful number here against TCU, mm-hmm. who's shown the cracks in the Shield lately. Yeah. Plus 170 on the Sooners is not a bad look. I'll just end it at that. I mean, the way the TCU looked last week, Oklahoma at plus 170 is 100% viable.
Yeah, that was actually one of them for me. And you know what? Let me go.
There aren't too many deep long shots this week, for what it's worth. Like, just listed prices, not too many crazy.
I actually have two more, and this is very interesting. I'm not saying they win, but be cautious of James Madison at Coastal.
Oh, yes. I was looking at this too. I was.
Coastal's changing up their pitching rotation. Their boy Raleigh Eichhoff, who's usually their Friday night guy, is going on Saturday.
I don't really love Eichhoff. I'm not as high on
either. I don't either, but here's the deal. I love the Shants. I think there's a good chance the Shants should sweep. And, I mean, just keep taking the Rovers. They're just an absolute wagon, and their pitching isn't that great. But JMU was the team that did bat around Hagen Smith in the first inning of the opening day. Now, granted,
it was game three against Arkansas, too. They're alive.
Yeah. JMU is a little sneaky dog. Would it shock me to see them take one game? No. But no. The fact is they are plus 240 at Coastal Carolina. There's a lot of hype around Coastal. They've been kicking the shit out of everybody. They just put up 18 against Wake Forest.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. You're getting a lot of hype on them, and the price is reflecting in that. There's all this talk. JMU's got no shot, blah, blah, blah. Coastal might be overlooking JMU. And I got to be honest, because how big the price is, you're going to get a really good look on the run line for all three games. 2.5 runs, maybe even 3.5. I do think JMU could possibly steal one, maybe on Sunday, but wouldn't surprise me to see them at least play one or two of these games within 3 runs.
Dude, that one was also on my short list because I just don't think I'm as high on Coastal Carolina as everybody else. I know about their high-powered offense, but the pitching staff is going to keep in, some opponents in some of these games that they would rather want to run away from. So this is the one that I'm going to give out. I don't love it for Friday because you're fading their ace. Cam Leiter's looked pretty dominant so far this year, but this is the Link Jarrett Bowl. Notre Dame could steal one from Florida State this weekend and put a one in that zero L column. So I'll toss that one out as my second. Again, I didn't love too many of these long shots on the money line. My third one's much shorter for this segment. But Johnny, what do you think about Notre Dame possibly being live in one of the three games, getting back at their old coach, and to your last one that you were talking about?
Yeah, I think Notre Dame could take one. Florida State's not going to stay undefeated forever. I really love this Seminoles team. You know how much I was talking them up on my preseason.
Me too. Pod.
I had them as a ticket to win the ACC regular season. I just bet it again the other day. I really like the Seminoles. I was expecting big things, and so far they have delivered. I do think the pitching is going to regress to some point. I'm a big fan of Cam Leiter, so I'm not necessarily talking about him.
Gavin Adams is out for the year. So
yeah, and Jamie Arnold, I'm expecting a little bit of regression. He's been great, but at some point I do think that's going to come down. But for my last one, and this is not a Friday, upset. Mississippi State's going to take one against LSU, and I think it might be – they could take two. They could take Saturday with Cal Steven going, who's looked pretty strong. And then how about Sunday against Thatcher Hurd? You got my boy, this switch pitching Gerangelo Senja, who's looked great. He made one mistake last week against Evansville. He missed a 2-1 fastball. He missed middle in to Ty Rummy, whatever. But he's looked awesome. Back-to-back 10K games from the right side. He's up to 97. The fastball's live. The slider's looking sharp. From the left side, he's got a big looping slider. The fastball's getting up to 94. I'm really liking the maturity and the growth from Senja. This is the guy who's probably a Friday or Saturday guy on most teams in the country. And I think as a Sunday guy, matchup against Thatcher Hurd, who at any given moment can have a blow-up outing. We're going to probably see Mississippi State, after they get that ass beat tomorrow against Luke Holman, we're probably going to see them north of like 180, 190, and beyond for Saturday and Sunday. They're going to take at least one of the Saturday and Sunday games. They could take both, but I think they'll take one.
Crutch is agreeing with you with the Sunday look against Thatcher Hurd. Xavier just beat LSU on Sunday last week. I hit on that money line fading Hurd. Just to back you up on the maybe not a Friday upset, their ace, Nathaniel Dome, is not pitching this weekend for the Bulldogs. So my last dog, I told you it's not a large one at all. It's actually quite short. San Diego comes to Ann Arbor, Michigan. just the weather climate alone is going to fuck up some of these USD bats. So Michigan on Fridays and Sundays are live with both Mitch Voit and Dylan Vigue pitching. They're plus 130 right now on the money line. That's not a bad, not a terrible look on my Wolverines. They can stick it. They're competitive in two of the three games against Coastal Carolina, against some average pitching. And I nothing that the Toreros have in that staff blow me away. Alrighty, Johnny.
One more before we get out of here. Anybody feeling the fade on Texas this weekend? Washington Huskies, they're not as good as they were last year, but you know, considering how bad the Longhorns have been, and I know they're coming off a good series win in Lubbock against the Red Raiders, LeBaron Johnson has not looked good in his last two starts. You know, ideally I don't like to fade him, but he had five walks last weekend. He got beat up a little bit against LSU. He has not been sharp whatsoever. And I think maybe he's just working through some stuff. So you're going to get a good run line price tomorrow night against him with the Huskies. Right now they're plus 220 on the money line. You're laying almost minus 300 with Texas. So I do feel like Washington could take one game. And I feel like because the Longhorns have a lot of holes, the Huskies could keep at least two of these games close.
I like it. So I pulled up the pitching matchup here. I would target Saturday a little bit. Just for me, Jared Angman doesn't have the stuff that he did last year. He's not had a great start to the season, and their competition they've faced has not been great. Calvin Kirchhoff's been a better option for the Huskies starting games. And Cody Howard has kind of been, you know, a little bit out of nowhere. I don't know what happened to who was the Saturday starter?
Charlie Hurley.
Yeah, I don't know where he's at, but they've got Texas has a TBA on Sunday. So Hurley and Tanner Witt no longer in the starting rotation here. Witt, because of performance. Hurley, he might be a little bit nicked up. I have no clue. But Saturday is a nice look because Hurley's not going on Saturday. This would be their fourth best starting pitcher in Cody Howard, who is entering the season.
The main culprit of that 11-3 meltdown against Vanderbilt a couple weeks ago, FYI.
Cody Howard?
Yeah.
I didn't catch that game. I was on vacation, so good to know.
I had a part of Vanderbilt in there, and I was, like, really pissed off. I was like, dude, I hope Texas mercies him at this point. Don't let Vanderbilt come back and try and stage one because they're not going to win, and they came back, and I hit because of it.
So good to know. I knew I luck boxed my way into Vanderbilt money line there, but nice to know who was on the mound for that blow up. For me, from the games that we covered, I'll be tweeting out my full card tomorrow when most of the run lines and totals get released around noon ish. That's when my full card will be out. I like Georgia on the money line. It's currently minus 150. I like the under in Tennessee, Alabama. And for the dog, we usually do a lock and dog. The lock's going to be Georgia. The dog's going to be Tennessee. And Survivor, if you didn't back my Survivor pick last week, I like Oregon in the Survivor pool this week against Cal. Johnny, you normally ended off with your full card. Go ahead. Spit.
No doubt. Obviously, these are a little bit outdated because I gave them out at 5 hours ago.
You did tweet them earlier. So
this is what I do every Friday. I'm one of the first, if not the first person, to give out the lines. I hawk them. all day long. You guys know that. Holy shit, Keenan Allen just got traded to the Bears. Duke Blue Devils money line -150, Texas A&M -110, Georgia -130, South Carolina -120, Arizona -166 against ASU. Jackson Kent for the Wildcats has been awesome this year, so I'm going to continue to back him and this Arizona offense that is pretty goddamn good. Then I'm going to go Auburn money line +130, and then do a three-team parlay with Coastal, LSU, Florida State for +135, and then another parlay with Santa Barbara with Matt Ager, Oregon State, DBU with Ryan Johnson at +169, and anything else that comes up with the run lines and the totals tomorrow.
Good stuff. Johnny is the first one to the lines, usually every freaking night. Shout out to Johnny. He's the one that's hitting me up telling me that the opening lines are out. And also, I know the Twitter algorithm fucks up our numbers, so we don't truly know how many have been watching live, but over 450 have tuned in either on Twitter/X and YouTube. Shout out to all you guys. You can follow Johnny on X/Twitter _JohnnyVTV. You can follow me on that same platform, NoahB77 underscore. This show, this YouTube video file, I will be sending to Johnny. He will be uploading it to his own YouTube platform, Johnny Venezia. It's just his name. And this was also going to be out on audio on podcast platforms for both of ours in about an hour, give or take. So hopefully most of the lines stay and hold. And hopefully you all enjoy this little bit of a joint episode here. Specifically on the college baseball experience side of things, I will be in Vegas next week for the Madness Thursday opening night of the first round. It's going to be tough for your boy to get himself together and do a college baseball episode. Shout out to all the troopers. Johnny, I don't know if you're planning on doing one, but if you are, I would like to point my following over to you and tune into his show on Thursday night covering the weekend if he is doing one.
I'm always doing one. I appreciate your generosity, and I graciously accept.
All right, good stuff. And last thing that I wanted to do was, hit subscribe, like the video as well. Johnny, anything else that you want to plug before we get out of here?
Don't forget podcast Breaking Bet every Thursday night. And every Friday night covering the Friday and Saturday slates. You can follow me on Twitter @_JohnnyVTV. And check out my podcast on Spotify, Breaking Bet, the college baseball betting show.
All righty. Well, that does it for us. You've been listening to Breaking Bet and the college baseball experience. You better start thinking about yours. Adios, amigos.